Hi, this is Refinish 69. Tonight's the show is going to be a little bit different. Tonight I'm doing this show for World AIDS Day, which is December 1st, and has been December 1st for the past 26 years. I've been involved in World AIDS Day since the very first one back in the 80s. I never thought when we sat in the living room of a flat in Raleigh, North Carolina, planning that first one for Raleigh, as other people around the world were planning theirs, that we would still be doing this many years later. I've lost over 1,000 people that I call friends to AIDS. I lost a lover. I lost a best friend, or several best friends, to AIDS. And I miss them dearly. They were incredible people that meant a lot to me. And then there are the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people we've lost that I don't know, who were just as much loved by others. So this show is in memory of all these phenomenal people. I'm going to tell stories of some of the people I've lost and try and bring the reality of this disease to you through my voice and through music. And I hope that as you listen to the show, you will realize that this is not something that can be forgotten. This is something we still need to work on so that we can stop people from losing other people, other loved ones, and so that we can stop the suffering, the pain, and the death.
Never have sunlight on your face.
That, of course, is Wind Beneath My Wings by Bette Midler, the Divine Miss M. That song is one of the songs that had come out when one of my best friends let me know that he was sick and that he was dying. And it was also one of his favorite songs, and Bette Midler had always been one of our favorites. And that friend, that dear sweet loved one, was David Pendergrass. David Pendergrass was the first person that I knew personally that died from AIDS. David died back in the 80s. David was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful young man. When I first met him, he was working as a bartender at the gay bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. I had come out, I was going out, and of course when I first saw David, I had the wildest crush on him you could possibly imagine. And then I realized that instead of someone to date, this was someone who was the brother my own brother could never be. David and I became best friends. We talked about everything. We talked about who we dated. We talked about shopping. We talked about art. We talked about movies. Notorious for sitting there in the middle of the night after he'd get off from work. You know, the bar closes at 2. They have to do cleanup. So we're talking 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. We're eating Breyers ice cream, Doritos that are dunked into just sour cream, nothing else, and talking and laughing and sharing our thoughts, our fears, watching horrible, horrible old movies on TV, because of course that time of morning that's the only thing that's on, and just enjoying being friends and being so close that we can say anything or do anything and the other one not get mad. I loved David beyond belief. He was one of the most special people I've ever met in my life. Most open, caring, loving people to everyone in the world. David taught me how to love myself for who I was and not worry about what other people think and just enjoy life. Now, to give you an idea, this is Raleigh, North Carolina. This is back in the 80s. Granted, it's the state capital, but it's still North Carolina. There's one gay bar. Well, actually two. There's one gay bar that is predominantly male. There's one that is predominantly female, both owned by the same person. And this is about the only place to go except for an adult bookstore. And once a year, there's the Gay Pride Parade in Raleigh, which, of course, I was involved in. And going to the bar was a major part of gay life because it was the only outlet we had at the time. There was the Metropolitan Community Church that had started up there. But then I was burned out on religion, so I didn't go. So this is where the social things were. And, of course, David was one of my best friends, and we got so we'd do things, of course, away from the bar. And one of the biggest or best memories, I should say, from being around David is a whole group of us, four or five of us, had gone over to Cary to go shopping, which is a town outside, and there was a mall there. And I had stopped to look at something along the way, and all of a sudden I hear this voice echoing down the hall of this mall. Miss Thing, are you ever going to be done? And it's David, of course, screaming at me. And, of course, I turn around without batting an eye. Oh, shut up, bitch. I'll be there in a second. Neither one of us are Nelly. Neither one of us are effeminate. Neither one of us are drag queens. Never have been. But it's just the way we cut up with each other once in a while. And for us to feel comfortable enough to do that in the middle of a mall in Cary, North Carolina, and not give a damn who hurt us, was just incredible freedom. The day I received the call saying that David had died, I fell apart. I got that call at work, and I left, and I went home, sobbing the entire way. I lived 10 blocks from work, and I walked home, crying uncontrollably, could not stop. And one of my best friends that was still alive, I called him and told him what had happened. And he came over immediately to talk to me and to hold me in his arms while I cried. And he told me something then that has helped me through many of the losses and still helps me. That the one thing is, when you lose someone that you love, you keep talking to them and saying all the things you want to say because they still hear you. They're still listening. And they're still answering you. It's just on a different level. And so I still talk to David, or David's spirit, his soul. What a wonderful, beautiful soul and heart he had and has, along with the many other people I've lost. Now I'm going to find another song, and then I'm going to go on from here with other stories of losses, and then also with some facts and figures, of course, later in the show, because I think that's important also. Thank you.
I knew I loved you before.
That is I Knew I Loved You. And that's from the Affirmation album by Savage Garden. And that song sums up a lot of feelings for me. It tells you how I felt about my lover that I lost to AIDS. Don Close was his name. Don and I met in San Francisco one night when I had walked 3 blocks from the apartment I was living at to have dinner by myself at a restaurant. I walked in. I had a book with me because I'm an avid reader. And I sat down. I was smoking a cigarette. And I was reading. And I looked up. And this young man behind the counter, who was very cute, was grinning at me. So I smiled, looked back at the book, started reading again. Felt someone staring at me, looked over. He was smiling at me again, so I smiled back. And then I was like, this is stupid. Oh, my God. I'm in the middle of San Francisco, downtown. I'm not in the Castro. I'm having dinner. My back is killing me because I pulled a muscle in my back. Forget this. So I start concentrating on my book. Next thing I know, I hear someone plop down in the booth across from me and go, if you act like you know me, I can smoke a cigarette here instead of having to go outside or go back in the office. And I looked up, and there he was. And it was Don. That's when we introduced ourselves to each other. Turns out he was the manager at the restaurant. And we started talking. And talking. And then my food came up. He says, well, I'll leave you alone so you can enjoy your dinner. Thank you. And I said, okay, but come back and join me when I finish for another cigarette. So he came back after dinner and we talked. Then I moved over to the counter while he counted out the cash register and talked to him in between him running around doing things and being the manager and doing work he had to do. Then, of course, at the end of the evening, I gave him my phone number because I knew I had met someone incredibly special, and I had not felt that way in eons. I had actually, just a month or so ago, broken up with someone and sworn up and down I would never date again as long as I lived. I never wanted to be in love. The only thing I wanted was someone to have sex with, and I did want it basically, excuse the terminology, fuck buddies, and I did not want any social involvement or emotional involvement, I should say, with them. I actually didn't care if I had social involvement with them either because I had friends as far as for the social part of my life. So I wasn't really worried about any of the other. I went around telling everybody the next day how wonderful this person was that I had met. Well, 2 weeks later, still no phone call. And, of course, this is a restaurant I go to all the time for dinner. Of course, it was the first time I'd ever run into Don. So I go back basically to have dinner, and basically in my mind is running through, I can't wait for him to come up and say something because I'm going to say, you typical San Francisco faggot, ask for someone's phone number and never call. Well, I go in. Of course, I have a book. I'm reading, having coffee, waiting for my dinner, and all of a sudden, someone's at my shoulder and I hear this. Please forgive me. I know you think I'm a typical San Francisco faggot, but I lost your phone number. Can I please have it again? And it was Don. So we started talking again. He sat down, had a cigarette with me. I had dinner. He came back and had another cigarette with me. I wound up talking with him for 2 hours again. And then due to some unusual circumstances, Don and I talked a whole lot for months, but we didn't actually date or go out on our first date for 6 months. And when we did the first date, I invited him to my apartment and I cooked him a gourmet meal. And I felt like he runs restaurants, you know, taking him to a restaurant's not a great thing. I'm not a big fan of movies for a first date because you can't really talk to the person because I hate people that talk during movies. Plus, if you pick the wrong movie, you've made a fool out of yourself. And so I went all out. I did a beautiful, organic, gourmet salad, ribs, all different kinds of vegetables, and homemade chocolate mousse. And, of course, he ate everything. And, of course, he was stunning. And it's one of the most incredible dates, most incredible evenings of my entire life. And then a couple of weeks later, we had our second date where I had invited him to dinner yet again because it's his birthday. And I had presents for him. Yes, I know I'm a little overboard, but I knew I was in love. I knew I'd met the man that I wanted to spend my life with. And then, of course, the next night, which was actually his birthday night, I showed up at his place of business with a double sheet cake that I had made from scratch. All the candles, lit the candles outside, walking in, and served cake to everybody in the restaurant. Scared the hell out of him, shocked him to death. We had our moments when things weren't great. Donna and I were together for 5.5 years until he died. I still remember the first time he got really, really sick after we had gotten together. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I felt like there was a furnace in bed beside me. I jumped up, I got the thermometer, I took his temperature. His temperature was 104. But he refused to get to the hospital. I sat by the bed on his side all night long, doing ice water and dipping claws into it and putting it on his forehead and rubbing him down with alcohol to try and get his temperature down, which I did, so that he wouldn't have brain damage. And then in the morning, when we saw these incredible sores had come across his face, he had had one that was a little spot that had started that was itching really bad and kind of painful. And then it went up one whole side of his face. It turned out he had shingles, along with the other opportunistic infections that were affecting him at the time. An earache, the shingles, and I don't even know what all else. But I picked him up physically and carried him to the car after he got dressed, and we went to San Francisco General, and we spent the entire day waiting there. And of course, when we got through and I got him home, after I dropped off his prescriptions at the hospital, I had to turn around and go back and wait another 4 hours for the prescription. San Francisco General has one of the best AIDS wards in the world, but also it's, if you don't have insurance, and Don didn't, it's horrendous waiting and just suffering and waiting and waiting and waiting. It's one of the hardest days of my entire life. We had not even been together for 1 year, and I almost lost him. But then he got better, and we had our ups and downs. We had different things like that happen through the different years. But always, the one thing is that we were so much in love. Now, I'll never forget, it was the last year he's alive, and I took a picture of him at a birthday party we had gone to. And when I got the pictures developed, he pulled the pictures out, and he pointed at him. He says, "This is why I don't ever want you to take pictures of me again. I look like a corpse." And what most people don't understand is that the entire time Don and I were together, yes, there were times when I looked at him and I realized he was getting gaunt, that his skin texture had changed, that his hair had changed, had gotten thin and was falling out. But normally when I looked at Don, I saw the man I fell in love with. I saw the beautiful, beautiful man that I fell in love with. Or at least he was beautiful to me. And I was madly in love. Now, yes, there were times when he got sick that I would sit there and pray that he would die so that he didn't have to suffer anymore. The last time I took him to the hospital, well, actually, I took him to the doctor's, and we took him immediately to ICU from the doctor's office. I put him in. They ran tests. I came back. Talked to the doctor outside, which, of course, I knew that meant really bad news. And the doctor told me, we can start trying to treat him for the cancer. We can start trying to treat him for his kidneys that are failing. We can start trying to treat him for the pneumonia. We can start trying to treat him for, and start listing all the different things that were wrong. But the treatments would be more painful, and it's not going to do anything. So you have a decision. We either do the treatments, or we let him die. And I knew, and Don and I had talked about this, that he did not want to die in the hospital. So I went in with as brave a face as I could, and of course started crying immediately. Told him what the doctor had said, and said, honey, we have to make a decision. Do you want to come home? Because I can get that set up with hospice care. Or do you want to try to do the treatments? And he just looked at me. He started crying. He's like, honey, I'm tired. I'm really tired. So I started working with hospice. And of course, unfortunately, because things were so crazy and it was already so late in the day, I had to wait and get him home the next day. So I left that night. I went home, cleaned house, made phone calls. Of course, went by and saw my dear friend Carl, who had just lost his lover Keith, 8 days before. And I'll tell that story in a little bit about that. But when I walked into Carl's place, because I had a key, because of all the stuff that had gone on with Keith, I walked in and Carl was standing there with a bunch of other people that knew both of us, but did not know me as well as they did Carl. And I told him, I said, well, I guess this is the first unofficial meeting of the Widows Club. And told him what had happened. And started crying. And first went home. The next night, they brought Don home 6:30 in the evening. And then the following evening, he died at 7 o'clock. As he was reaching for my hand after being semi-comatose all day long. It's one of the hardest things I've ever gone through, especially as all day, that day, the last day, I'd go by as he was laying there, basically comatose, not talking to me, not responding, and going, honey, it's okay to let go. I'll be okay. I love you. You can let go. And then him finally letting go and passing away. It was devastating, is the only way to describe it. And still is, to this day. Now I'm going to find another song, then I'm going to tell some more stories. This is going to be a long show, folks, because this is a very difficult subject for me. And I'm releasing a lot of inner pain and turmoil, and hopefully reaching people so that they will understand what this is all about.
My head just feels in pain. I missed the bus and there'll be hell. when you call me, and it's not so bad, it's not so bad. And I want to thank you for giving me the best day of my life. Just to be with you is having the best day of my life. The door, I'm home at last, and I'm soaking through and through. And then you handed me a towel, and all I see is you. And even if my house falls down now, I wouldn't have a clue, because you're near me. And
that is Thank You by Dido, and that is from the Love Rocks CD from HRC.org, Human Rights Campaign. I do want to thank the people that I have known through the years, because I've known some incredible people that I've met, that I've lost. My lover, Don. David, who's my best friend, the brother I never had, even though I do have a brother. My friend Keith, that I lost 10 days before Don died. Some of the other people that I have lost, whether it's to the disease or through moving or them disappearing. There was a dear, sweet friend of mine years ago in North Carolina that I called partner. We used to dance together every Friday and Saturday night and Sunday night, almost any night. We saw each other out at the bar, and that was back during my heyday when I was going out 7 nights a week. And it's funny as hell, because we had known each other for 2 years and been dancing together, and I had always just called him partner because I was really horrible with names. And I'll never forget, because one night he asked me to introduce him to someone that I was talking to, and I said, sure, I'll be glad to, as soon as you tell me what the hell your name is. And it dawned on him that I had never called him by his name in 2 years' time. And when he found out he was positive, he disappeared. No one could find him. There were other friends that I lost. Another friend named David, who just disappeared off the face of the earth once he found out he was positive. Another person I dated, Thomas, that I don't know if he's still alive. Someone else I dated named Bernie, that I was very much in love with, but he couldn't deal with his HIV status and got strung out on drugs and everything else, and I had to leave the relationship because I couldn't handle the destruction or what it was doing to me. But these were people that I loved, people that I cared about deeply, and I lost them to the disease, whether they're alive or not. I still lost them to AIDS. I've lost many other people. I've lost so many people that at one time in San Francisco, it was one weekend, I had 10 memorials to go to in one weekend. Now, I still cooked the food for each one, I'm an avid cook. I love to cook. But I dropped off the food and I left. I did not go to any of them. And I quit going. Until I went to Keith's when he died. Which was actually the Saturday night after Don died. And then the following Saturday night, I threw a memorial party for Don. And it was a party where it was just poker game in one room, music in the other, food everywhere, all over the entire house, everything cooked from scratch, everything cooked by me, punch, soda, wine, and then, of course, halfway into the thing, I went and got the Absolut bottle out and put it down by the punch bottle bowl, and I said, anyone that wants to add some alcohol into their own glass can, just don't pour it into the bowl, because I'm going to have a drink, and of course, that night, the rule was, no one could cry but me, because if anyone else did, I was going to throw them out of the house. And I stuck to that rule the entire night. This should not still be happening, folks. We should not still be losing people to this disease. And the reason the infection rates are going up, because I've already mentioned in another show that the infection rates across the world are actually going up, and it's because of this insanity of teaching abstinence only. And that's probably the only thing political I'm going to talk about in the show. But this has got to stop. We actually have to teach the reality of the disease, not what the Bible-thumping assholes want us to teach. Because that's not going to do anybody any good, and we're just going to keep losing more people. And losing a loved one to this disease, watching them suffer, watching them die, watching them go from David, a bodybuilder who was not over bulked up, but still a bodybuilder, beautiful, muscled young man, becoming a skeleton. Don, who was always slender, looking like a picture from the death camps in Germany. Other people taking their lives, committing suicide, disappearing, running away from the people that cared about them because they didn't know how to deal with the situation. And that young people are getting infected now, or still, is insane. Because the information is out there. We just have to make sure that we pass this information on. Doing the AIDS walk once a year, wearing the ribbons, you know, on World AIDS Day, is fine. It's a wonderful thing. But we also have to be willing to actually talk about this with our friends, our family, our coworkers, our children, if you have children. Because it's not just a gay disease. It attacks everyone. It kills everyone. There is no cure. The year before Don died, the World AIDS Conference actually finally admitted that having been looking for a cure for some years was actually the wrong way. They should have been looking for a vaccine. That it is a virus, and there has never been a cure or a known cure for a virus. The only thing they've ever been able to find for any of them was a vaccine. And they're still working on it. And now they have found drugs that make the quality of life better and extend life. But the ultimate is still death. And it's painful, horrible, debilitating, not only to the person who's dying, but to their loved ones who are watching. Now, I'm doing this show to honor the loved ones we have lost, and also to honor the ones living with HIV and AIDS. You'll see the virtual red ribbon that is on my site, where you can click and donate as an international group. You can also contact the AIDS organizations in your area, because they need money, they need funding, they need help, they need volunteers, they need donations. And it all has to come from us. The federal funding has been cut. It's being cut more and more. And they need our help. And we have to do this for the people we love, the people we've lost, the people that we're going to lose, and also to try and stop it so we don't lose more people in the future to this god-awful disease, and that we actually try to make a difference and stop this. I know we can do it, folks. I just know it's going to take a lot more time and a lot more energy, and is something that people that actually care about the world have to do. Now, I know this show's already gone over my usual time, and I'm probably going to call it quits because this has brought up a lot more feelings and hurt and pain than I thought it would. And it does every year when I do these, or when I do a blog entry about it. This year I'm probably not going to do a blog. I'm just going to bring up the one from last year and attach this to it. But we have to remember these people and love them. Never let their memories die. And we also have to make sure we quit losing people. World AIDS Day is December 1st. Please wear your red ribbon. Remember those we've lost. Honor those that are living with AIDS and HIV. If you can, please, please, please donate to one of the groups in your area that needs your help. And let's make a difference, folks. Thank you. I will be ending this with a song. I've just got to find the right one. And thank you for listening.
True colors, and
like a wave.